Hey everyone, I am Reva and just want to take a moment and thank you for listening to our studio podcast. Although we are here in Greenville, South Carolina, we are grateful for your support to see the message of Jesus go out all over the world. In case you are not aware, we have a YouTube channel which you can find the link in our podcast bio. We hope you enjoy this week's talk and it encourages you and it helps you to be the human God designed you to be. So with that, let's get right to it.
One of my favorite places in the world is Japan. People ask me often, what's your favorite place in the world? And it's the impossible question for me. It rivals, what's your favorite movie in the world? And that's impossible to answer because you just can't narrow it down to one. And so I try to answer the movie question, what's the movie that I like to watch over and over, repeatedly over time? And the one that is actually due up for another watch is Lord of the Rings. I'm a huge Lord of the Rings fan. It is one of the films, probably one of my most watched films that I've watched. But when it comes to countries, I'm so full of conflict because there's so many great places in the world. And for me, culture, as you know, I'm passionate about understanding culture and customs and people. And so to boil it down to one being the favorite, then I'm missing out on what all the others have to say and offer. But I'll be really frank with you. Japan is special. If you've not been to Japan, you need to add it to your list of places to go, especially as a Westerner. If you are from the Western world and you grew up with the Western framework, you need to be exposed to a very different framework. A very different way of life, a very different value system. And it's one of the most beautiful places in the world. The people are just some of the most genuine people you'll ever meet. The way they present themselves, the way they present food. When you go to buy groceries, they take the time to wrap each item in some type of paper or package and then put it in your bag. It's beautiful. It's everything is art. Everything is driven around presentation and art and beauty and to bring a sense of calm and peace into the world that they live in. If you love peaches, I understand we got great peaches here in South Carolina, but I'm going to say another place that you should try peaches are in Japan. If you've never seen cherry blossoms, go during the cherry blossom season. It's one of the most spectacular things you will ever see. I've been to Tokyo, Osaka many times, and then Kyoto. And I love the culture, and I remember we went into Kyoto, which is considered kind of a cultural center. And it's very cultural, it's very spiritual, a lot of history originated within Kyoto. And I remember going through this one particular building, and I was looking at the different, it was a museum, had artifacts of pieces of history, and there was this one glass case item, and it was the outfit, the gear that a samurai would wear. And it's awesome. I mean, it's beautiful to look at. You know, you're like, how do I own one of those? I just want a sword, a samurai sword. I don't personally own one because I think to get a real one, it's quite costly and very hard to get. But in ancient Japanese culture, there arose a need for skilled fighters to protect and to preserve. And what emerged out of that was what you call the samurai. And we also talk about ninja. That's a whole different conversation. But today, I want to just focus specifically around samurai. These were highly skilled fighters. They're some of the most skilled fighters you'll find in all of human history was a samurai. They followed a moral code that just didn't affect how they fought or protect or preserve. It actually determined their lifestyle and their behavior. It was called the Bushido Code. And samurais were noblemen. In fact, most of them came from elite families in Japanese culture, and they follow this code in life and in combat. Samurais were warriors that served the ruling emperor, and they never asked for a fee. They didn't require a fee for their service. And their code is legendary, and they're known because of their extraordinary fighting skills. But what they would do to protect this code, they would do whatever it takes to protect this code. It was a strict moral code. Even modern-day fighting groups have a code, a set of ethics, a set of values, a set of ethos the Navy SEALs, which would be our bragging point on a global scale of some of our most feared elite fighters for us here in America, called the Navy SEAL. They even have something called the SEAL's ethos. It's not just how they fight and do their duty, it's actually determining their lifestyle and their behavior. So any major elite fighting group, they have a code of conduct of how they operate. And today I want to go deeper into this when it pertains to us that have said yes to following Jesus. I've been unpacking with you for the last month and a half. We've had a couple weeks off, and the passage in Philippians 3:20 that we are citizens of heaven, and today we're going to continue that. I want to unpack the fourth installment, and again, the first three are actually on the podcast. I'd encourage you to go get caught up on that. You know, the eyes of the world were just on Paris for the last few weeks, and I know some of you boycotted the Olympics. I did not boycott the Olympics. I wanted to celebrate humans that paid incredible sacrifice and a price to perform at the most highest elite level. Obviously, there's a lot of controversy surrounding it. For me, I wanted to celebrate what people decided to give their lives to. And so I spent a lot of time watching the Olympics. Anytime I try to get steal time, every evening I would put it on and watch all the highlights. And if I had time during the day, I would watch different live events. And I'm so moved by Olympic athletes. I'm moved by athletes, but especially one that operate at an elite level. It's a very small percentage of the human population can do what they do. And I don't know if we really fully realize how much time and energy and blood and sweat and pain and agony, defeat that they will go through just to shave off half a second. One example is Sydney McLaughlin Lavrone. She won the gold in Tokyo, but she also won the gold in Paris in the 400-meter hurdles. She won the gold in Tokyo and spent another last 3 years preparing for Paris, and she shaved off an entire second. She's broken her record 6 times. She is unmatched and unrivaled. It is so fun to watch her. And then you have the swimmer, Kate Ledecky. If you didn't watch her at all, she owned the top 20 fastest times in the 1500 freestyle. The top 20 fastest times. She just keeps breaking her record. Every time she gets in the pool, she breaks her record. And she's got the top 20 times, fastest times in all of history for the 1500 freestyle. She won by 10 seconds this year. This isn't a close thing. She literally could eat a lunch while she's waiting for silver medal to come in. This is how fast she is. She, when you look at the picture, it looks like she's the only one swimming in the pool because she's so far ahead. 10 seconds in swimming is a long time. Then, of course, we can't forget the sharpshooter from Turkey. Guy's a legend. He rolls in, and all of his opponents have these fancy eye gear and eyewear to do discoloration and focus and all this. And this guy rolls in with looks like just normal clothes, hand in the pocket, prescription glasses, holds up the gun, and wins a silver medal. Like the most underwhelming contestant, but yet he becomes a viral sensation that now athletes around the world are doing his famous pose when they score a touchdown or make a goal. So we've got all these great moments, and the list goes on, story after story of greatness emerges. There's so many that I could spend, and I probably will in the weeks to come because I love sport. But the story after story of greatness also means the vicious cycle of sacrifice, agony, defeat, and victory. And this is the part that we don't often see when it requires to be someone to become great. These humans that we call Olympians are insanely high-performing who have initiated a level of discipline that only a small percentage of humans are willing to go through. In the arenas of life, the one area that has captured my attention is the arena of sport. I believe sport provides experiences that elevate you physically, mentally, and emotionally. It introduces you to a set of skills, life skills, that are translatable to every area of your life. When our daughters were in elementary school, my wife being a gymnast growing up, and I was just never around the culture of gymnastics. And so when she said gymnastics, I was a little bit surprised. I was like, I didn't know that was a sport, but that's okay. I quickly learned my naivety and ignorance was very obvious because I realized that's the one sport I should have done is gymnastics. And I remember putting our girls in gymnastics, and I was just going along with the party. And I remember sitting there in the stand watching my young girls, I mean 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 years old in this class, and I'm paying someone a lot of money to teach them how to do things that I could easily teach them to do, which is somersaults and cartwheels and all the basic normal motions of a child. But yet I'm paying somebody lots of money to teach them how to do it. And I remember thinking to myself, man, I want them to hurry up and get to the back handspring. Like, can you just do that in a month? Like, this is why I pay you lots of money to show I want my child to do back handspring. And I don't know how long it was, but it was months, if not years, before they performed a proper back handspring. But what I didn't realize is that all the time they were spending on what you call fundamentals or elements of what it takes when you put them all together to perform a back handspring. And when that day finally came and I watched Kennedy, my oldest, perform a back handspring with no help, I realized, oh, this is why you spend a lot of money on months and months and months of being in the gym, of learning each specific little element that when you put it all together, you can do something at that level. You see, in life, we have things called fundamentals. They're the basic principles that guide you, that when you learn to do it through discipline, through agony, through defeat, when you learn to commit yourself to that, there comes a point where when you put it all together, you begin to crush life. And today, I want to bring you into that. I want to speak to those who are wanting to go to a different dimension in life. You're wanting to level up in the arena of life. You're tired. You're worn out by internal frameworks that are set up to fail. That you're tired of internal frameworks that are set up for mediocrity. You actually are done living a life that's setting up to fail or just live a mediocre life. You actually are here today because you want to level up and you want to crush it in life. And although the circumstances may never change, you can still be victorious. There's a mindset that you must embrace, and it's this. You can be victorious when the battle's not even over yet. And a lot of us attach our victory to when the battle's over. I'm telling you what, there's a much greater victory. If you can realize before the battle's ever over, in fact, it may never end, but guess what? You can be victorious. And today, I want to draw your attention back to the book of Philippians. If you want to put up the first slide, I have slides to assist and to help. Today, I want to talk about 6 principles, codes of conduct, of what it means to be a citizen of heaven. And I would encourage you to take pictures. Today is merely an introduction to these 6 principles that I have curated out of the book of Philippians for your benefit, for our benefit. Because I understand many of you wanting to be victorious and triumphant, but you're waiting for the battle to be over. And I'm here to tell you, you can accomplish triumph and victory, and the battle still wages on. 2 of you got that. Okay, I'll take that. That's all I need for today. If you have your Bible, get it open to Philippians chapter 1, verse 12. I'm going to introduce the first principle called life with purpose. Go to chapter 1, verse 12. Now, I want you to know, brothers and sisters, that what has happened to me has actually served to advance the gospel. As a result, it had become clear throughout the whole palace guard and to everyone else that I am in the chains, for Christ. And because of my chains, most of the brothers and sisters have become confident in the Lord and dare all the more to proclaim the gospel without fear. The first principle is you have to live your life with a purpose. Now, I understand. You hear this all the time. Some of you got all the books and purpose-driven this and live life. I mean, I understand there's so much content out there. It's ridiculous. But I want to just remind you, it's actually true. You actually need to understand that your life actually serves something beyond you. And sometimes when we boil life down to our purposes, we get discouraged. But when you connect your life to a greater purpose, so in order to be someone that I believe is a citizen of heaven, you actually have to understand it requires an ability to see that your life is about advancing the kingdom. Your life is actually about seeing Jesus be displayed in every area of our life. Not just in our own internal life, but in our external life. That wherever you go, the kingdom is with you. And one of the fundamental beliefs of a citizen of heaven is that everywhere I go, God is there. Everywhere I go, life has the opportunity to show up. Reconciliation had the opportunity to be displayed. Hope had the opportunity to overwhelm every other emotion in that experience. There is an awareness that my life is not my own. That my life isn't about just getting as comfortable and as secure as I can. My life is actually for something beyond me. And Paul understood this. He's sitting in prison trying to find the meaning of why this is happening. And he realized, oh, the gospel is being spread because I'm in chains. He found purpose. He found meaning. And he said, my courage of being here is actually putting courage in other people. So understand when you fight these battles and you run up against these things that confront you and your soul and the longing of who you are, guess what? If you approach it with purpose, it will actually advance the kingdom. Again, today is merely an introduction, so let's go to number two. Strength in unity. Go to chapter one. You're in chapter one. Go to verse 27. This is the longest piece that we're going to read today, but it's hard to just hopscotch through this. I want to read these to bring them home the best I know how. Verse 27, whatever happens, conduct yourselves in a manner worthy of the gospel of Christ. Highlight that for your own sake. Then whether I come and see you or only hear about you in my absence, I will know that you stand firm in the one spirit, striving together as one for the faith of the gospel, without being frightened in any way by those who oppose you. This is a sign to them that they will be destroyed, but that you will be saved, and that by God. 29, for it had been granted to you on behalf of Christ, not only to believe in him, but also to suffer for him. Some of you need to actually highlight that. That's the one passage we love skipping over. It's the one sentence like, not in the New Testament theology. This is in the New Testament. And Paul makes it very clear. You will suffer. There will be a suffering when you attach yourself to Jesus. Since you are going through the same struggle you saw I had, and now hear that I still have, verse 1 of chapter 2, therefore, if you have any encouragement from being united with Christ, if any comfort from his love, if any common sharing in the Spirit, if any tenderness and compassion, verse 2 is what I wanted to focus on, then make my joy complete by being like-minded, having the same love, and being one in spirit and of one mind. Do nothing out of selfish ambition or vain conceit. Rather, in humility, value others above yourselves, not looking for your own interest, to your own interest, but each of you to the interest of others. Strength and unity is a principle that you are better when you're together. It's the concept. And the challenge we have in the Western world versus an Eastern framework is we are complete when we are together. In a Western framework is I'm an individual in a community. And this is one of the great challenges we have is that we spend so much time becoming so individualistic, and then we become a part of a community as long as we protect our individualism. Now, am I saying that's wrong? Not necessarily, but I'm saying this is the conflict we have when we hear these passages. We're like, as long as I can be myself, then I'll be one with you. As long as we think the same, act the same, do everything the same, then I'll be in unity with you. An Eastern framework was very different than that. It was like, I'm not complete unless I'm connected to you. And I want to propose to you, you are not complete by yourself. You actually experience a more well-rounded completeness when you're doing life with other people. So there's strength and unity. And Paul is emphasizing this. Let's go to number three. We're going to go to chapter 2, verse 14 through 16. Do everything. Say that with me. Do everything without grumbling or arguing. Some of us have a PhD in this one. We love to argue and we love to grumble. Today, you need to get a PhD and it's the opposite. I love what Paul says in verse 15, so that you may become blameless and pure, children of God without fault in a warped and crooked generation. Then you will shine among them like stars in the sky. The third one is shine like stars. It's incredibly simple. Reduce your complaining and reduce your arguing. When you become someone that refuses to complain and argue, this doesn't mean you don't work things out. This just means that when people experience you, they don't think you're always complaining or you're always picking a fight and making arguments. You actually are someone that is the opposite of that. And Paul says, guys, if you want to stand out in a dark world and shine like stars, just stop these two things. Stop complaining and stop arguing. And in a day where you are championed if you complain. In fact, some of the most followed viral videos right now on social media is when you complain. It's so much easier to complain in life than to not. It takes more of a man and it takes more of a woman to not complain. It takes more character. It takes more grit. It takes more courage. It takes more strength. It takes more humility to not complain and not argue and not grumble. So if you want to shine like stars, give that one a try. Let's go to number four. We're going to jump now to chapter 3. Chapter 3, verse 12. Not that I have already obtained all this or have already arrived at my goal, but I press on to take hold of that for which Christ Jesus took a hold of me. Brothers and sisters, I do not consider myself yet to have taken hold of it. But one thing I do, forgetting what is behind and straining toward what is ahead, I press on toward the goal to win the prize for which God has called me heavenward in Christ Jesus. The fourth one is run the race. And what I want to say, this is not a sprint. This is a lifetime. This is a commitment to be in it for the long haul. This is a race. It's meant to be ran by you, and it's a long game. It is exhausting, but oh, so worth it. And some of you, I can tell, you're tired. You're exhausted. You don't want to run the race anymore. You just want to kind of check out. Don't check out. Some of you just checking out of relationships. Some of you just checking out and pursuing things. Some of you are checking out in your work. Some of you are even questioning checking out of your faith. Listen, you're better than that. You're greater than that. You've got so much more within you. You were designed to run this race. I've got a quote this week that really, really hit me well. Failure is not the opposite of success. Failure is a part of success. Number five, joy over anxiety. Joy over anxiety. I lowercase anxiety on purpose. I didn't want to give that one any more attention than it needed. We're going to go to chapter 4 for this one. We're going to read three verses, 4, 5, and 6 in chapter 4. Rejoice in the Lord always. I will say it again. Rejoice. Do it again. Rejoice in the Lord always. I will say it again. Rejoice. Let your gentleness be evident to all. The Lord is near. Do not be anxious about anything, but in every situation, by prayer, petition, with thanksgiving, present your request to God. I want to challenge you. Let joy win. Let joy win in the end. Let joy tip the scales of your life. If you're dealing with joy and anxiety and joy and something else, just work hard to let joy win and tip the scales in your own soul. Joy triumphs over anxiety and worry. You see, anxiety is rooted in an outcome. We get anxious because we want to control an outcome and we can't. Worry is rooted in something you actually cannot control. As much as we try, you see, joy is deeper than the outcomes. I want you to understand, there's the difference between happiness and joy. They're very different. Happiness is circumstantial. Oh, I'm happy because this happened. But there's actually joy, which is deeper than anything circumstantial. And what Paul is saying, he's not saying be happy because life is supposed to be great. He's saying there's the dimension available to you and I as citizens of heaven. This is why when Jesus teaches on parables, he says, enter into the joy of the Lord. He's not saying because you've done something well and I'm now pleased with you, now you can be happy. No, he's introducing them to a dimension of joy that is not based on circumstances or situations or outcomes. It is so much deeper than that. And I think one of the greatest challenges you and I have being human and living in today's climate is to fight for that joy. Is to fight for that joy. Because you are trained by culture. You're trained by who you follow. You're trained by who you listen to give into anxiety and worry. You're supposed to worry. You're supposed to have anxiety. You're supposed to be depressed. And I want to tell you today, that's what the world thinks. But you and I have access to step into a joy that's so much deeper. Last but not least, the sixth final principle I want to talk about today is radical contentment. Say that with me, radical contentment. So now we're going to read the last passage in chapter 4, verses 10 through 13. I rejoice greatly in the Lord that at last you renewed your concern for me. Indeed, you were concerned but had no opportunity to show it. I'm not saying this because I am in need, for I have learned to be content whatever the circumstances. I know what it is to be in need, and I know what it is to have plenty. I have learned the secret of being content in any and every situation, whether well-fed or hungry, whether living in plenty or in want. Verse 13, and I can do all this through him who gives me strength. Some of your translations said, I can do all things through Christ who strengthens me. It's the one verse that I actually think we use it out of context often. You know, we're about to do something courageous. I can do all things through Christ who strengthens me. We're about to start a new business. I can do all things through Christ who strengthens me. We're looking at Mount Everest going, I'm going to scale that mountain. I can do all things through Christ who strengthens me. Now, the beautiful part of that verse, there's truth in that. But Paul is actually not addressing that. He's actually saying, guys, there's another dimension of joy and contentment that doesn't come because of something. He's introducing us to this reality. Have you ever wondered why when Moses said, who are you to Yahweh? Yahweh says, I am. That's like the worst answer. I am what? Like, what are you talking about? It's one of the most bizarre conversations that our English language does not do justice of the complexity of that answer. And it's I am, period. What is God trying to teach Moses and his people? I exist. That's it. So what Paul is essentially bringing to our attention in this passage, he said, I am content because he exists. I'm not content because he's fed me or brought provision for me or he's navigated things in life or he's fought battles for me. That's all important, and God does that. He's not talking about something that God does and is going to do. He's saying it's so much deeper than that. There's a code of conduct for a citizen of heaven, and it's getting to the place not to become stoic, not to become flat and unemotional, is to rest on the reality that God exists, and therefore I'm simply content. This is what Paul is moving us into in this letter and throughout all of his letters, but we have focused primarily on Philippians. I want to challenge you as we wrap up this talk today. These six, go ahead and put them in the last slide if you don't mind. If you want to take a picture for your own note, please do so. Being a citizen of heaven is fundamentally built on the concept that God is more than enough. It's fundamentally built on this idea that God is more than enough. And therefore, you have this incredible privilege to experience this and bring this reality into every arena of your life. Spend your life being committed to practicing the fundamentals. Some of us are trying to do back handspring, but we haven't mastered the somersault. Some of us are trying to do these massive things, but we've not yet to put in the time, the energy, experience agony, defeat, failure, triumph, in order to get to the place where these fundamentals become the foundation, the baseline for everything that you do. And I want to encourage you, we dive into these six principles. It's not just being able to do the motion. It's also about building up muscles and motion through repetition. So why don't you stand?
Thanks for listening to today's talk. If you're interested in learning more about Studio here in Greenville, you can go check out our website, studiogreenville.com, and you can give us a follow on Instagram. Our handle is studio.greenville. Have a great week.